This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Odyssey. Your Radio Doctor does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, products, physicians, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on Your Radio Doctor. Always consult your own physician. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, WPHT, HD, WOGL, HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. It's time for the Delaware Valley's first radio doctor.
On call every Saturday afternoon at 5.
This is Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
Listen, 7 months or 10 months is an absolutely exceptionally short time frame to produce this vaccine.
Your health determines your life, your longevity, and your happiness. Let your radio doctor lead the way with your medical education. Your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie.
Good afternoon and welcome to Your Radio Doctor. I'm your host, Dr. Marianne Ritchie. It's March, Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and we've talked about different aspects of colorectal cancer on the show before, such as prevention and various options for screening tests, therapies, and even a vaccine. But it's so important to update our listeners once again because colorectal cancer is the number two cause of cancer death. So it's common, often deadly, but preventable. If you remember nothing else from our conversations today, preventable. So we need to remind people also that the initial age for screening has been lowered from 50 to 45. 45 is the latest that you should begin having screening exams. And for the past several years, a continued alarming rise in the number of cases found in younger patients, that's under age 40. The American Cancer Society projects that by 2030, the colorectal cancer will be the leading cause of cancer deaths for those ages 20 to 49. And that was in a study in the Journal of the American Medical Association in 2021. And ladies, you need to hear that your cancer prevention plan includes more than just a mammogram. When we combine men and women, more people die of colorectal cancer than breast cancer. But it's not a contest. Here to shed the much needed light on these topics is Dr. Robin Mendelson, a gastroenterologist from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, the oldest and largest private cancer center in the world. She's also an associate attending at Memorial, an associate professor of medicine at Weill Cornell Medicine, the clinical director of gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, and the co-director of the Center for Young Onset Colorectal and Gastrointestinal Cancers at Memorial, the first of its kind in the world. So she's internationally recognized for her work, and we thank you so much, Robin, for joining us today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back.
I could repeat all that, but I'd have to take several deep breaths. That's incredible. What a joy it is to have you, and what a pedigree. Robin, I always like to start my lectures with lay people and distinguish the terms colon cancer, which we used to refer, and now colorectal. I think that's important for people to hear.
Yep. So, you know, the colon is the large intestine or the last part of the digestive tract. You know, it's where your bowel movements, your poop, your stool comes out. The rectum is the last part of the colon. And we use the terms colon, colorectal interchangeably, but if we're being semantic, it should really be colorectal to include everything. And we do treat rectal cancers differently than we treat colon cancer. So it's important to really understand the differences.
Yeah, because that last straight part is tucked into your pelvis near the uterus in women and prostate in men. And if we have to radiate that, which sometimes we do, we have to consider, well, or that's why we do, because it's sucked into the pelvis and immobile. So that's why it's important to distinguish. So we talk about a screening test. What's the definition of a screening test? That's important for people to know as well.
Yeah, so a screening test will pick up a disease when you don't have symptoms. So that's the most important part. And sometimes that's why people don't get screening, because they're feeling well. But the truth is that a screening test is when you're feeling completely fine. If you're having symptoms, then it becomes a diagnostic test. But purely screening means you have no symptoms.
Right. And if somebody has symptoms, we say that's what you bring to the doctor. I have a headache, I have belly pain, I have fever. But a sign is something we find when you get to the office, that your blood count is low, you have anemia. And if you feel fine, but you have anemia, we have to make sure you're not losing blood from any place in yourself. But as GI docs, we concern ourselves with ulcers, cancers, but and colorectal cancer, because that can be a really silent cause for anemia, but an important one. So I love that you said the other day we chatted, you hear people say the best time to get screened is when you feel well, but you corrected that and made it even clearer. The only time to get screened is when you feel well. You don't wait for symptoms. And if you're under age 45 and somebody has symptoms, what do you tell them?
So if you're under age 45 and you have symptoms, and the most common symptoms of colorectal cancer are rectal bleeding, abdominal pain or distension or bloating, change in your bowel habits, extreme fatigue or weight loss, any of these that are persistent really, really should be a prompt evaluation. Because as you said, this cancer is curable, it is treatable, and the earlier it's found, the more potentially treatable and curable it is.
Mm-hmm. So we say 45 is the latest you should schedule, unless you have symptoms and you want to shake your groove thing and get to the doctor stat. Because if it turns out it's not cancer, then we rejoice. But if it is, you haven't delayed the finding and the appropriate therapy. And we talk about options for screening, and I think we should mention all of them so it's clear for people. Although we usually resort to or choose either stool testing or colonoscopy. But let's talk about the stool tests for starters.
Yep. So as you said, there are options, which I think is really important to point out, because some people think that there aren't multiple options. So I think it's important to point out that there are options for treatment, for screening. The stool tests are considered to be good tests for finding cancer. They're not as great for finding polyps, which are precancerous growths that over time can turn into cancer. But they are good at finding cancer in patients that don't have symptoms, so then it's found early. And our two most common stool tests that are used, one is called FIT, which is fecal immunochemical testing. And what that is looking for is blood in the stool that's specific to human colon. So you submit one sample, you don't have to modify your diet, you don't have to modify your medications. And if it's positive, it is specific to the human colon. If it is positive, you do need to get a colonoscopy, and it's recommended to do it within 90 days. And it doesn't always mean that there's cancer. You can get blood in your stool from other things like hemorrhoids, but it is important to get checked out if it is positive. And then we have our multi-targeted stool DNA, or if you've seen the commercials, Cologuard. And what that is it's looking at, it has the component of the FIT, so it has the blood test, but it also is looking for DNA that polyps and cancer shed in the stool. So it has those two components. That comes back as positive, then you also need a colonoscopy. And again, that's good at finding cancers, not as good as finding polyps, but good at finding cancers. And if you choose to have a stool test, if it is negative, you need to come back, depending on which one, every 1 to 3 years for it to be effective. And again, any positive needs a colonoscopy. And a colonoscopy is what we do as GI docs. It is considered an invasive test because you do get anesthesia, you take a preparation to clean yourself out, and then we take a look with the camera, we look at the entire colon. We are able to biopsy during that time. And if we do see polyps, which again are precancerous growths that can turn into cancer, if we do see those, we're usually able to take them out at the same time. And so the benefit of colonoscopy is that we can not only detect cancer early, but we can actually prevent cancer by finding these polyps and removing them.
And that was a beautiful explanation of the whole cascade of choices, because the stool test, I want our listeners to envision the colon is a tunnel. And if waste in the shape of cargo called stool, so if stool's coming through the tunnel, we're lucky if it brushes past a growth on the wall or the ceiling or whatever, you know, because it doesn't always. We would agree that blood is food for cancer, right? So the reason we look for blood in the stool is because tumors or colon cancer can trickle blood, and we're lucky if the stool is smart enough to rub up against that tumor and carry the blood out with it. That's the reasoning behind it. So if the stool is smaller or doesn't touch the tumor and you're having any issues, don't count on that as being always accurate, because it can miss the blood. But with the FIT test, the other important distinction, we used to have a study called Hemocult. We look for hidden blood, and it was picking up blood from the rare hamburger you had the day before. So as you say, this is now specific to human blood, not animal blood from your food. Or if you brush your teeth too vigorously and you have blood from your upper GI tract, this also keeps us with finding blood from the lower GI tract, right, from the colon. So it does narrow a lot of false positives or responses. But the dancing box, when you send your stool away, so many people, because we live in a techno world and DNA, oh, then it must be accurate. There are two things we look for when we evaluate tests and how helpful they are. If they're specific, so as you say, if we're picking up blood from your diet or brushing your teeth, that's not specific to colon cancer. And are they sensitive? Are they really good at picking up? And the DNA and blood in the stool test, the dancing box on TV, only picks up 92% of cancers, not because it's a bad test, but because the stool might not brush up against that cancer and get the material we need, right? The blood and the DNA from the tumor, not DNA from you, but DNA from the tumor. So people need to be aware that how much does a FIT test cost? Maybe $30 or $35?
Yeah.
So we can get that every year because it's not super expensive. The DNA and stool blood test is $649.31 or whatever it is, but it's about $650. So you can only get it every 3 years. And my concern when I tell patients, they say, I don't want to go through the prep and the scope. If you rely on the Cologuard, no offense, Cologuard folks, but they print their own data. If we miss it today, you can't get tested again for 3 years. And that polyp that has turned into cancer has 3 years to set up shopping malls and condos. Yeah. I think people need to be aware of that. That's all.
Yeah. But also stressing that I think that the most important test, as we always say, is the one that gets done.
The one that gets done. Yes. So I just think people need to know that. And we can't use it.
Right. Important to understand it all. And once you understand it, if you do choose a stool test, that is an absolutely acceptable test.
Yes. Yes.
As long as it's done and gets done well and appropriately with appropriate follow-up.
And as you say, if it is positive, you're committed to getting the colonoscopy. We won't do that test unless you promise. And it also isn't as good at picking up polyps. And colonoscopy, you said so beautifully, our whole goal is to prevent the nastiness of cancer in any shape or form. But with colorectal cancer, if we can go in, take a look and find precancerous polyps, and prevent it, yahoo. So the prep, I know we're trying to make it less unpleasant. And now there's a pill form, and there was a pill form, but the newer one's better. Tell us about that.
Yep. So there's now many, many different preps on the market. And there is a newer one. It does require you to take many pills, and you still have to drink a lot of fluid. But people who take it, say that if they couldn't tolerate the full liquid prep, they tolerate this well. It is a good prep. It is not always covered by insurance. And so that's an important factor. But again, I think it's important to discuss with your providers that there are options for the PrEP if that's what's your barrier. We're trying to remove, you know, whatever barriers we can to get these tests done. So just going over the options is important and knowing that we are working on getting a better PrEP, but it is so important to have a good PrEP because, you know, we're not, I always tell my patients, you know, we're not trying to torture you by putting you through the PrEP and telling you not to eat this beforehand. It's in order to get a good view, we really need to get you cleaned out. And there can be flat cancers that will be hidden behind stool. And so, you know, it's really so important that when we do this test, we're able to get a good look so that we can identify polyps. There are now all these flat polyps that we see that we can't get a good look without a good PrEP. So it's so important.
And you make such a good point. If there's a little, if there's a puddle of fluid that's not super clear, it's hard to wash away, or even solid covering a polyp, we haven't done you a favor. So it's important to take out your instructions about a week ahead of time and really go through, if you have any questions, as Dr. Mendelsohn says, it is really important that you follow the directions to the letter. And in terms of people kind of turning their noses up and saying, ooh, the PrEP, ironically, you quoted a study the other day that it turns out that people that have undergo colonoscopy once say, what was the big deal? I'm happy to return. And, you know, whether it's 10 years later or 5 years later, it's a lot less burdensome than they thought. So on that note, let's take a little break. And when we come back, more from Dr. Robin Mendelsohn from Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, exclusively presented by Independence Blue Cross. If you have a question for the medical mailbag, just send a note to doctor@yourradiodoctor.net.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
This is Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death. Initial screening has been lowered from age 50 to 45 because numbers are rising in younger people. Join the Blue Lights campaign in March. Put a strand of blue lights on your home or business, a blue light on your porch. Send a photo of your lights or of you wearing blue to info@bluelightscampaign.com, info@bluelightscampaign.com. Stop cancer, get screened.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're here with Dr. Robin Mendelsohn, who is the co-director of the Center for Young Onset Colorectal and Gastrointestinal Cancers at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York. Because, Robin, people need to be reminded on a minute-to-minute basis that the initial screening for colorectal cancer that's so preventable. In May of 2021, the age for initial screening dropped from 50 to 45. Why is that?
Yep. So, you know, we have seen such a nice decrease in the incidence of colorectal cancer since the advent of screening. And though this is likely multifactorial due to modifications of risk factors and better treatment, the majority has really been attributed to colorectal cancer screening. But there is a group under the age of 50 who had not been screened. And in the same time period that we saw this decrease, we saw an increase in those under 50 and since the 1990s. And the increase, it's been about 1% to 2% per year. And the biggest increase has actually been in the youngest group, in the 20 to 29 group. The numbers are still small, but these numbers are increasing.
And it's interesting. I have a son who was born in 1990. And a few years ago, when we look at data in medicine studies, we talk about cohorts, where the people who born in 1990, when they turned 30 years of age, their risk for rectal cancer was four times higher, and colon cancer two times higher, meaning colon's distinguished from rectum, than people who turned 30 that had been born in 1970. That was so remarkable and dramatic when we saw that. And as you say, our big concern is even under age 29.
Yep. So that's exactly what happened when they were updating the guidelines. So originally, in order to figure out, should we decrease the age had been made 50, we put data into microsimulation data to see, does it make sense to decrease the age? And at first, mm-hmm. it sort of seemed to make sense, but the number of colonoscopies needed to really change were really great. So they didn't update, they didn't change the age. And then they put this idea that you're talking about, this cohort effect, meaning that somebody who is 40 now has an increased risk of colorectal cancer, and that risk increases as you get older. So someone who is 40, by the time they're 60, their risk is much higher than somebody who is 60 right now. And when mm-hmm. they put that data into the microsimulation data, it did make sense to decrease the age to 45. And that's what really drove the change in the screening guidelines.
Mm-hmm. And to make things worse, when you think about it, young people are invincible and they're not as suspicious if they have some rectal bleeding. They think, oh man, did I eat hot peppers? That or was it something I ate? Or is it hemorrhoids? We can never bank on that, right? Because so they're more likely to wait before they see a doctor. And with some practitioners, they say, well, we can't scope everybody walking down the street. So they might hesitate to say, go see a GI doctor or let's test you more thoroughly, right? So
absolutely. Yeah, we've, you know, this has been reported on, you know, there's delays on both sides, exactly as you say, the patient side, you know, young, otherwise healthy, you know, no family history, you know, doesn't think that this could possibly be cancer. But then also on the provider side, you know, patients report having to go to usually more than one and sometimes up to four doctors to get the diagnosis. Because again, they say you're young, you're healthy, you can't have cancer.
Yeah.
So we're really working and shows like this to put the word out there. I don't want to scare everybody. The majority of people with rectal bleeding will not have cancer. But as we've talked about, it is treatable, it is beatable, it is curable. So if you do have symptoms that are persistent, if you have it once and then never again, it's unlikely. But if you have persistent symptoms, it's so important to get evaluated.
And you're stressing that because the hallmark of colorectal cancer in young people is that when it is found, it's probably, or not probably, in many cases already spread or at a later stage because the young person said, otherwise I feel fine. Or the provider they see says, this isn't very likely. And as you mentioned, family history, family history, family history, family history. When you get together for Thanksgiving or now upcoming graduations or weddings, don't be shy about saying to Uncle Ed, how did grandmother die? Or because family history, and the other thing is, and I often hear this with other providers, will say, do you have a family history of colorectal cancer? And the person says, no. What about colon polyps? Not all polyps bump the risk of relatives, but there are certain polyps when we find out that they were large or really close to cancer, what we call high-grade dysplasia, meaning really irregular cells, we tell them to start at a younger age.
Right. So important to know your first-degree relatives, parents, siblings, children. I always tell people I know that this stuff is not dinner conversation, and so many families.
Sure, it is.
My dinner conversations, poop, poop, poop. But in general, a lot of people don't like to talk about this. But so important. A lot of families don't like to talk about it or burn in other people, but it does change the age, and you might start earlier than 45. So important to know your family history, as you say, for advanced polyps and for cancer. Mm-hmm.
And it's ironic because so many other things are that people do bring up in family settings or even among friends are just downright inappropriate, but they won't talk about, you know, use big people terms like, does your waist have blood in it, whatever. But anyhow, there's a way, folks, and we're driving this message home to you because it can save your life, for Pete's sake. So when we look at young people, I know that's the big quest now. What is causing this? Are the risk factors the same as older patients? Do we know that yet?
So the answer is that we don't fully know. We are working on it. We're getting closer. We used to think, oh, you're young. You have to have a family history. You have to have a genetic predisposition. No, it seems about only 10 to 20% will. So about 80% have no family history, no genetic mutation. We looked at the tumors between those under 50 and over 50. They look the same. They behave the same. So it doesn't seem to be a different tumor. It seems when we look at the data that the change happened somewhere in the 1950s and 1960s. So trying to figure out what's happened over those few decades. So the things that come up, obesity. So, you know, we know obesity is a risk factor for colorectal cancer in general. And there are some studies to suggest that obesity plays a role. And when we looked at our patients, they were more likely to be overweight and obese, but not more likely than the general population without cancer. And anecdotally, you know, there are some patients that are obese, but it doesn't answer the whole question. Many of these patients are vegetarian marathon runners and don't fit that picture. There's a signal that diabetes may play a role and something that we're actively looking into. Fatty liver, not necessarily associated with obesity and diabetes, may be a trigger that we're looking into. We are going, this is not published yet, but we are going to be presenting our data on microbiome, and there seem to be differences. So there seem to be little signals, and I do say, I think if it was one answer, we probably would have figured it out by now, and it's probably multiple things working together. But we are getting closer and finding more signals and trying to delve deeper.
Yeah. And we're going to talk in the next segment, about your center that you co-direct for young onset of colorectal cancer and GI malignancies in general. Yesterday, fantastic seminar all day at Memorial when we covered all the GI malignancies and screening, prevention, and update for us. It was outstanding. But one of the other things that American Cancer Society and USPSTF, the United States Preventive Services Task Force, is pushing, obviously smoking, you got to be asleep to think that smoking is okay, because it can hurt you in so many ways. I'm not criticizing people who do. We all have habits that we should address. But know that smoking, you're inhaling inflammatory particles. And am I right? The link with obesity is that it causes inflammation, at least in some settings, and maybe that's what bumps the risk for cancer. We don't know. So we mentioned obesity, diabetes, but the things we also can control are smoking, if we can find some substitute for smoking. But I also always ask the question about marijuana. I don't know if we know that inhaling those inflammatory particles bump the risk. Do we know? We probably don't. But vaping. Vaping is my new biggest enemy, because we see these little 12 and 14, the data, little tweens vaping because people think they're inhaling steam, right? And yet formaldehyde, acetaldehyde are in that vape. And I'm not even talking about people that add THC or blah, 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 make it even funner, but because then they put oil droplets in to get a better vape and they get lipid pneumonia, they get drops of lipid in their lungs and can become acutely ill and leave the planet. But all those things have to be mentioned too.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have data directly associating them, but, you know, they are associated with an increased risk of cancer and can be associated with, you know, lung issues, pulmonary issues. And if you do develop colon cancer, you want to be in your best shape no matter what. So these are all, you know, healthy advice.
And alcohol too bumps the risk for multiple cancers. So that's why we're asking people, men, stop at 2 drinks maximum per day, women, 1 serving per day, 5 ounces wine, 1 can of beer, 1.5 ounces of hard alcohol. But that doesn't mean that you should drink all 14 drinks on one day if you can drink 7 times 2, 14 a week. But all those things are so important. And the more people that hear this, the more people we can help. Let's take a little break and hear about this week's Real Champion. And now for your Real Champion. I call this segment, Dr. Angie Nicholas Talks About Grief and Gratitude. March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, and with numbers of cases in younger patients rising at an alarming rate, there's a national directive for adults age 45 and over to get screened for this preventable disease. The leading patient advocacy group in the country is Fight Colorectal Cancer, a band of passionate people whose mission it is to find the cure for colorectal cancer and bring hope to patients and their families. They're proud of their effective and loud collective voice, which drives policy change, funds research, educates the public, and connects patients to share their zeal. One of those leading the charge is the chair of the Fight Colorectal Cancer Board, Dr. Angie Nicholas. Long before colorectal cancer invaded her personal life, she had already chosen the path of becoming a healer. Biology major at St. Joseph's University, go fellow Hawk, medical school at Temple University, then residency in family medicine. She stayed at Temple to practice and found it very fulfilling to treat patients in obstetrics, intensive care, make home visits, caring for patients of all ages in all settings. She also taught residents. Soon her role expanded to IT as she became the chief medical information officer and helping to design and develop electronic medical records. Later, she added business recruitment and development to her tasks. Then on to Siemens, the technology company, continuing to design and develop electronic medical records. Well, after 6 years, she missed the camaraderie of medical colleagues and had a job interview at Einstein Montgomery Hospital as their medical director. Well, her enthusiasm was short-lived because on that same day, her dear husband John was diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer. How could that be? How did this sentence befall him? After years of practice, what could she have missed? They both worked at Siemens, where he sold financial systems for hospital software. He had symptoms for only 2 weeks, and he acted quickly. Plus, his family history showed no increased risk. The surgeon said his cancer was inoperable. Worse yet, he was only 45 years old. Angie was laser-focused. She found a surgeon willing to resect the colon tumor and part of his liver. She found several clinical trials, and over time, John was in 6. About 18 months into treatment, Angie found Fight Colorectal Cancer. They were soliciting patient stories. Initially, John didn't want to write an essay, but finally realized he had a voice and wanted to use it. Angie and John went to Springfield, Missouri to a meeting. John hesitated because he realized it would mean that he was a cancer guy. But he wrote, "I'm a husband, a father, a salesman, and a golfer. Cancer is not who I am." He realized that other patients there were also under 50, even under age 40. People who became his connection to life because he saw that they were thriving. John's treatment stabilized his condition, and he stayed strong for 5 years, playing golf every day so he had a focus other than cancer and death. He wanted to create fun and memories for his 2 daughters. He learned that people could live for quite a long time, and he was convinced that he would survive until the cure came along. John would say, "I only had to focus on my cancer, not anyone else's," and he fought hard. From the minute Angie heard the diagnosis, she never left John's side, giving his meds through the night, sleeping on a chair in the emergency department or on the floor of his hospital room. John used to say his treatment plan was, "Get in the car, John. We're going to Johns Hopkins or the NIH or Penn." Angie's grateful that John had confidence in her plan. She found it very hard to reconcile that she couldn't save him. And knowing that he was going to die no matter what she did, was a great responsibility, especially as a physician. Angie is also grateful that John died surrounded by the people who loved him and whom he loved, 13 people who knew his entire story. It was an amazing experience. She also considers it a gift from John that those same 13 people shared their love with her. Some patients lose friends when they're diagnosed with cancer, but their friends remain faithful and supportive. John left the world in April 2019. Grief made Angie's first year hard, but the second year brought COVID. By then, Angie's career included 2 other major stepping stones, and by the pandemic, she was named Chief Clinical Officer for the North Region of Jefferson, which includes overseeing quality and safety, as well as development of programs and services for patients at 6 hospitals. COVID required her intense focus to assure staff and patients were safe. But she was grateful for those stressful days, some as long as 18 hours, because they helped her to grieve. She had to learn how to function again. John was on the board of Fight Colorectal Cancer, and when he died, Angie took his seat and eventually became chair of the board. It's her passion project, and she treasures it as her connection to John. Angie shares, "These were the people John needed to fight for, and I'm always going to be part of this community, which in many ways saved him for many years." Angie talks to a lot of people about processing and managing grief, finding its meaning and purpose. As a grateful recipient of Fight Colorectal Cancer support, she now wants to help others who are still in the fight, including caregivers, and she works in communities to urge people to get screened. We salute you, Dr. Angie Nicholas. You're a real champion.
Today's edition of Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross, can be enjoyed anytime, anywhere, at your convenience. Just download the Odyssey app and search Your Radio Doctor. It's health education on demand.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, now Saturday afternoons at 5, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC.
Welcome back to Your Radio Doctor. We're learning so much about screening and prevention of colorectal cancer, especially in the big concern these days, the rise in younger people. Robin, we shared a conversation about 4 years ago when I was fortunate enough to have you as a guest on the show. And we just talked about, are we getting any closer to looking for a cause? The beauty of what you're doing is you have a registry, which means it's a collection of patients. When we last spoke, you had 600 patients. When I say registry, at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center, for our listeners, if by some misfortune there's somebody close to you or you are a young person under the age of 40, under the age of 50, really, you'll tell us more specifically, with colorectal cancer, this is the place to go for advice, yes?
Yes. So we opened the Center for Young Onset Colorectal Cancer in March of 2018. And unfortunately, we've had over 2,500 patients come through. And, you know, we founded the center for two main reasons. There's a clinical side and then the research side. And, you know, the clinical side is that these younger patients, you know, would say, you guys, you know how to take care of my cancer. No one was really taking care of me. And what we realized is that these younger patients have different needs than those in their 60s and 70s. These patients, a lot of them are in their 20s and 30s, starting families, wanting to start families, just starting a job. Most don't have a will. Most don't know what their wishes are, haven't thought about it. Also, many of them felt alone. Many people in their, you know, in their 50s, 60s, 70s know somebody with cancer or have friends that went through it. But these patients that are younger, you know, didn't have those cohorts. They were going out for happy hour and not talking about these things. And so what we did is we did the clinical side of things where every patient under 50 that comes in is offered to enter the center. They get a letter from myself and my co-director just welcoming them so that they know that they're not alone and going over our resources. And every person gets a social work consult, and we have a dedicated social worker, and we actually just got another one because we've been so busy. And they reach out, welcome, and then go over all of our resources. So everyone is offered referrals to fertility, sexual health, integrative medicine, nutrition, psychology, psychiatry, and to know what it's out there. And, you know, interestingly, we thought everybody was going to want every consult. And we actually published on this a few years ago about our experience. And, you know, what we found is that not almost everybody wanted a nutrition consult. I think it's one of the main aspects that people feel the most control over. Otherwise, we found that some people wanted sexual health consultations later in their treatment. And we've really been modifying it so that everybody gets offered these resources at the beginning. And then our coordinator actually reaches out about 3 to 4 months into treatment to again reach out. And we have boards so that people can write in, talk about their symptoms. And we have meetings. We had a meeting this past week. You know, really trying to create a community and to have resources that people need. And then the research side of things is that we collect tissue on everyone, and we have blood work, and then we are collecting stool on everyone, looking at microbiome. And everybody that comes in gets a questionnaire so that we can try to figure out why this is happening. It's a lengthy questionnaire asking about the usual stuff like family history, smoking, alcohol, everything that we talked about, but then also trying to look at things that have changed over the last few decades. So asking about breastfeeding patterns, IVF, C-section patterns, when did you get Wi-Fi? All of these things that seem to have changed over the last few decades, really trying to delve into why this is happening.
We know, I think that's so important for people to hear. And again, yours is the first center of its kind in the world. And with all the experience at Memorial, I feel so fortunate that I did my GI training there and then a year of nutrition. And the things I was seeing back in the 80s were remarkable. We shared the love of the chief who was there, was my teacher, and you know him too, Dr. Sid Winterer, to put together a multi-center study, meaning a VA, a community hospital, a university hospital, all different settings, and examine people to figure out which is the better test for preventing and finding precancer, removing it, or early cancer. Is an X-ray better than colonoscopy and all those things? That's where the guidelines, he was the maven of colon polyps and prevention of colon cancer. Absolutely. And we are, you know, his, I don't want to say his children, but we're his trainees. That's a big people word. And to see it just blossom like this and hear you, that you started out when we spoke 4 years ago with 600 patients, now 2,500. It's sad to think about it, but it's also wonderful that you are collecting stool, blood, samples, and samples from the biopsies of the cancers as well. Because my own dear sister passed away from breast cancer 12 years ago now, but they collected blood from her back then, thinking in the future, my sister who passed away is an identical twin. That could, maybe they'll find something 5 years from now or 10 years from now, and we'll have the advantage of that information. So you're really thinking forward, and people need to know how sophisticated and intricate and how intensely devoted you are to this.
And we actually expanded to all GI cancers in January of 2021.
Saying that.
Even though the numbers are smaller, we are unfortunately seeing an increase in stomach cancer, pancreas cancer, you know, GI cancers in these younger patients, and they have very similar needs. And so even though the numbers are much smaller because, you know, colorectal cancer is much more common, we did expand to all GI cancers. So we do offer all of these services for all patients under 50 with GI cancer.
So important that you said that, because pancreatic cancer is on the rise, and people need to also know about Barrett's esophagus, which is we have reflux, acid is a good thing. It's just like all food is good. Sugar is not bad, but in when it's in the right amount. If acid has very important jobs in our GI tract, or God wouldn't have put it there. But if it's in the wrong place and irritates your esophagus, in some people that irritation leads to a precancerous condition called Barrett's esophagus. And, you know, again, the seminar yesterday included that in discussion. It's so important that people know and tell their, if they move or they get a new doctor, that history is relayed. And Robin, I think it's also interesting that you mentioned cohort. So if we study a group of people that were all born in the year 2000, and what happens to all those people when they get to age 30 or 40, whatever the disease condition we're studying, that rise seemed to happen pretty quickly. So that's what makes us think it can't be genetic. It has to be a generation or whatever we follow, right? It's more likely environmental.
Right. Mm-hmm. It seems like it has to be some sort of exposure, you know, whether it's behavioral, lifestyle, environmental, and perhaps it, you know, it may end up being some complicated, you know, environmental exposure to your genetics, or, you know, something like that may end up be what comes up. But like, it does not seem to be explained by genetics. It does not explain, you know, by family history. And it does, the uptick happened in, you know, the 1950s, people born in the 1950s, 1960s. So people who are, you know, in their 60s now. So, you know, really trying to figure out, and I think it's important to note that it is a worldwide phenomenon. So we're seeing this throughout the world. Even we have an association with a hospital in Africa, and they're seeing it in Africa. Interestingly, it's a different spread, but still, you know, and so it's not something that is just, unique to the United States. It's being seen throughout the world.
And when we were in training and really focusing on learning more about colorectal cancer, I remember hearing, well, the U.S. eats all that red meat, and in countries where they just eat veggies and rice, they're groovy. They don't, but as you say, this is worldwide, which makes you think there is some environmental exposure. Maybe it's, well, who knows, but I
we're open to any suggestions.
Yes, but that would also be what's why it's so important for people to understand why you're saving samples of blood, stool, and biopsy tissue from the cancers. You'll be presenting your data or what you've learned about the gut microbiome. That's the bacteria that's kajillions of bugs in our GI tract that work to our advantage, but if they're a little bit out of kelter because you've been traveling or you're eating, your diet's a little different. You'll be presenting that at Digestive Disease Week. That's a funny title even itself, but that's when all the GI doctors who are, yes, like we are, we're medicine GI doctors, we do colonoscopy, GI surgeons, liver specialists called hepatologists, we all come together and share this information. So you'll be presenting what you've learned in studying the gut microbiome.
Yeah, well, we're going to be presenting our preliminary data that looked at the microbiome of young people versus average onset, so 50 and over. And we did see differences in the diversity, meaning, it's important to have a diverse makeup of your microbiome. And it seems like younger patients may have a lower diversity and also a different makeup. And so that may be a signal. And is it the microbiome itself? Is it what we did to change the microbiome? You know, that still remains a question and something that we are really delving into mm-hmm. now.
And I don't know about your population, but I certainly started years ago practice and I get a lot of women patients. I'm sure you do as well. But colorectal cancer, women need to hear that message over and over. Treat yourself like a diva. Treat yourself. We are the nurturers that take care of everyone else in the family, our children, our spouses, our friends, our parents. That's a good thing. But sometimes we neglect ourselves. And so women take time for the mammogram, the gynecology exams, because we have to get your gynecology exams and babies and all that good stuff. And mammograms, the pink campaigns have been outstanding in driving women to get mammography. But don't think that colorectal cancer is a man's disease. It's pretty much equal. I mean, maybe we get a little bit later with the protection of estrogen, but in the young population you're seeing, it's equal in men and women. Yes.
Absolutely.
And so, yes. You know, don't think mammogram and done because it's easier. You don't have to get sedated. You don't have to do bowel prep. More people die when we look at men and women combined, more people die of colorectal than breast, but it's not a contest. So the other thing I think people need to hear is that colorectal cancer behaves differently in women and African Americans. It's more likely to be at the top of the colon, which sometimes it's a little harder to detect. Maybe there's leftover stool is more likely to be there. But anyway, it occurs sometimes in a different location than it does in men. And women who smoke are more likely to die from colorectal cancer than men who smoke. So all these things should stir women to get screened and not put it off because they say, well, I already took time for mammogram and GYN exam. I just think that's so important. Yes?
Yes. Screening saves lives.
Let's take a little break and we'll be back for our wrap up with Dr. Robin Mendelson from Memorial Sloan Kettering.
Your Radio Doctor with Dr. Marianne Ritchie is presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.
This is Dr. Marianne Ritchie. Colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death. Initial screening has been lowered from age 50 to 45 because numbers are rising in younger people. Join the Blue Lights campaign in March. Put a strand of blue lights on your home or business, a blue light on your porch. Send a photo of your lights or of you wearing blue to info@bluelightscampaign.com, info@bluelightscampaign.com. Stop cancer, get screened.
And welcome back to your final segment of Your Radio Doctor. We call this segment Your Weekly Prescription. With our dear friend, Dr. Robin Mendelson from Memorial Sloan Kettering, you have done such great work, Robin, in teaching people and as the co-director of the Young Onset Colorectal Cancer and GI Malignancies in general. You shared with us that pancreatic cancer is on the rise in younger people, stomach cancer, and colorectal cancer. What's your take-home message for listeners?
So again, thank you so much for having me. It's such a joy to be back. And, you know, I think the message is that, you know, if you are 45 or over and you have not gotten screened for colorectal cancer, please, please get screened. There are different options. There are different options for PrEP. It is so important to talk to your provider about these options. And along those lines, please know about your family history. If you do have a family history, we often do screen you earlier. So you should know your family history as soon as you can so you know if you need earlier screening. But as we talked about, this increase that we're seeing is in a group that is not routinely screened. So we're seeing this and in the under 45, and the biggest increase has been in our youngest group, the 20 to 29 group. So the take-home message for that group is, and for anybody, of course, but specifically for people who are younger and have not been screened, if you have symptoms, the most common one being rectal bleeding or abdominal pain, change in your bowel habits. So if you used to be completely regular and you've become constipated, please, please get evaluated. Again, the majority of people with symptoms will not have cancer, but because the earlier it's found, the better, more treatment options we have. It is potentially curable. It is so important to get checked out. And so I think that's a take-home message. If you're of screening age, get screened. Know your family history. And if you're under the age of screening, you know, recognize your symptoms, discuss them, and advocate for yourself. If somebody tells you that you're too young to have cancer, please, please, please advocate for yourself.
Find another doctor, because you're not too young. And a couple of points to reiterate there. Family history, not just of colon cancer, but colon polyps. I've talked to so many patients who say, your mother, your dad, or your brother, anybody else have, they had polyps, they're fine. What? We need to know. We need to know, if possible, if we can get that. And the other thing is change in bowel habits. So let's say you see someone in the office who's had a lifetime of constipation, and so they're going more easily now, and they think that's great. It's a change from your uniqueness. And sometimes evacuating more easily is because blood is a great laxative. So you might be trickling little bits of blood enough that you say, whew, now I don't have to, say it's only happening every 3 or 4 days. Now I'm going more easily. That's not always a good thing. So tell your doctor. Really think about your doctor visits. The other thing that goes through my mind is, we looked at the statistics just from March of 2020, when we had our first, the official shutdown for COVID. Between March of 2020 and June, that little time alone, 18,000 cases of colorectal cancer were missed or delayed. So we're playing catch up, but we're trying to get this message out because 2030 is just around the corner when we know colorectal is going to be taking the front and center on the stage. But Barrett's esophageal cancer, pancreatic cancer, also we're paying close attention. Robin, if people want to learn more about the center, where you're the co-director at Memorial, how would they find out?
Absolutely. So all of the information's on our website. It's at mskcc.org. It's a long name, so I'm not going to read out our whole website, but if you search for us, we're on there. All the information of how to get to us is on there. And please, please reach out to us with any issues.
So MSKCC stands for Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center. .org, MSKCC. We're going to put this in our newsletter and on my website, yourradiodoctor.net. But it's so important that here we are. This is a goldmine of information and concern right here in New York City. If you can take time to go see a show, you could take time to go see Dr. Robin Mendelsohn, who is a mega superstar on Broadway as well when she has time. But Robin, thank you so much. This was just wonderful. And you're helping millions of people when you share this information. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you again.
Thank you for listening to Your Radio Doctor every Saturday here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. Listen to any of our 196 episodes on Audacy.com, AUDACY.com. Thanks to our exclusive sponsor, Independence Blue Cross. And remember to visit Helio.com, the medical media company and information platform that offers the latest in healthcare news and information. And remember, March is Colorectal Cancer Awareness Month, so get your blue lights ready. Put a strand of blue lights on the front of your home or business, or a blue bulb in your porch light. Help us remind everyone to get screened for colorectal cancer. You heard our guest today. It's the number two cause of cancer death, but it's preventable. Send us a picture of your blue lights or a picture of you in blue to info@bluelightscampaign.com. And please continue to pray for peace in our world, our country, our families, and in each of our own hearts. This is your radio doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, wishing you a happy, healthy, and safe week with the ones you love. Always here to remind you that your health is your wealth.
Thanks for listening to Your Radio Doctor, Dr. Marianne Ritchie, presented exclusively by Independence Blue Cross. To contact Dr. Marianne and to listen to today's show as well as past shows, visit yourradiodoctor.com. This program is paid for by Your Radio Doctor, LLC. All opinions or statements expressed on this program are solely those of Your Radio Doctor and their guests and do not reflect the opinions of WPHT or Audacy. Today's program has been pre-recorded.
At Independence Blue Cross, we take care of the people who take care of you. Everyday heroes like firefighters, teachers, farmers, and healthcare workers. Doctors and hospitals across the region have IBX, and they know what it means to have reliable access to care. So whether you're saving lives or just trying to live a healthier life, count on IBX, the region's number one health insurer for 85 years. Learn more at IBX.com.